Well, good afternoon and welcome to another session of Ask the Analyst. My name is Henry Jennings. It is Friday, the 2nd of June. And just before we kick off, just remind you that this is general advice only. So please do your own research, contact your own financial advisor regarding any of the thoughts, ideas, or insights in this presentation, if that is what we'd like to call it. So anyway, just kicking off tonight and just putting on the record button. So welcome to the Ask the Analyst session for Friday, June the 2nd. Hopefully this is working. I haven't had any comments through yet or any questions, so that is always a bit of a concern, but that is life. Hi, Henry. David, I traded APX and sold today. Thank you, sir. Can you comment on some graphite stocks? Thank you, David. Well, I will kick off with that question just in a minute. Just looking at the S&P ASX 200, we've certainly kicked off June in a little bit better style than we did in May, although it is a little tepid. But we did see today the first signs, perhaps, that we have got a little bit of interest returning in the resource space. That is something that happened today. The banks were very much down and very much ignored, to be honest. The industrials also, especially those that had exposure to the minimum wage increase that we saw today, 5.75%. So Woolies and Coles and those sorts of stocks not doing very well today. But the rest of the market was doing quite well, that's for sure. So it was a good day to be in resources. Well, whether it will last remains to be seen, but even the Aussie dollar was 66.15. You can see there on the ASX 200 closing for the week. We were down around 9 points, which was not an awful lot of interest, to be honest. All right, well, let's kick things off with some of the questions that people have asked. And we're going to kick off with David, which we've had a pretty good run in Appen. I have to say, I got very poo-pooed by a lot of people on Ausbiz when I called Appen as a buy. Rudy was very happy to see me struggle with that one, but it has proved to be a bit of a winner. Marcus did a stock take on Appen, and I had to remind him that I had been pushing it hard as he was not interested in the stock at all. But as it turned out, it's been a pretty much a winning trade, I'd have to say. And it has gone pretty well, so pretty pleased with that. Did also write this afternoon about Appen in terms of taking some profits. As far as graphite stocks go, thank you for the question, David. Well, of course, there's a couple of graphite stocks that we do follow here at Marcus today, one of which is Syrah, which, to be honest, has had its fair share of problems, hasn't it? S-Y-R is the stock code there. That has had its fair share of problems. They have had issues with Ballymer having to actually suspend production there because there's too much of this around at the moment. But there are some nascent signs, perhaps, that we're going to see a little bit of extra, well, a little bit of interest returning in the graphite space. So we shall see what happens there. But certainly, Syrah down and out, given that it's tax loss time in June as well, we may see that one continue to be under a little bit of pressure in the short term. But as I say, it does have potential. The other one that we have been involved in is Talga. And we rode that one all the way up from $1.25 back around here and took profits around $1.70 odd from memory, if it serves me correctly. And then we're waiting for a pullback. We have certainly seen that pullback. It may well be time to push back in to Talga, I have to say. That is certainly one on the graphite space. But there's certainly a lot happening at the moment in the lithium graphite space. We've seen some good rises, for instance, in Leo Lithium, which is certainly shaping up as a goodie. So that one there has been doing very well. And I have a stock on Monday in the rare earth space, which someone sent me some research on, which does look very, very interesting indeed. So, David, I think maybe we shall see a bit of a renaissance in some of these graphite stocks going forward. Captain David Donnelly, well, I salute you, sir, for your service. Can you give your opinion on ADH, especially considering its update today? Well, let's face it, it is no secret that consumer stocks are pretty much under pressure at the moment. And, of course, that not only the mortgage cliff is the problem, I'm just letting a few more people in, and I do tend to lose my place in the chat when I do that. But not only is the mortgage cliff the problem, but of course we've seen the rental cliff as well. I would imagine Adairs did pretty well during COVID, as everyone bunkered down and was looking at the higginess, I guess the Scandinavian word for getting cosy. But certainly there's nothing cosy about the share price at the moment. It took a big tumble today, down 14%. It wasn't a particularly good update, to say the least. The trading update, I guess it wasn't a massive surprise, to be honest. We have seen pretty much one after another in dominoes falling in the retail and consumer space. We had that updated guidance from Adairs. Sales growth year to date was up 5.2%, but in the last few weeks, or certainly the last half, down 3.4%, and Mocha not doing very well. They updated the guidance from a previous 70 to 80 million EBIT to 62 to 65. It was a pretty savage reaction, but the market's taking no prisoners at the moment. I would imagine it's always the three-day rule is a good one to follow, in that you get the first reaction, then the brokers will analyze it. They will probably downgrade it, admitting they were wrong on their recommendations. And then after two or three days, the thing settles down and you start to see some bargain hunters getting involved. So I'd leave it just for the time being if I were you. But maybe we will see a little bit of bargain hunting coming in. Ray Walsh asks about DVP. Now, DVP is an interesting one. It's a stock that I actually had in one of the baskets that I created a little while ago, and it did nothing for some time. You can see here the great attraction of Development Global is that it has Bill Beament in charge. Is a very large shareholder, I have to say, in this one. He was formerly of Northern Star. So he was one of the guys that put Northern Star together. This has only got a $600 million market cap. It's going quite well. We've had a recent Sulphur Springs update from the company, which has, let's just get that announcement up, but it certainly looks good. It's also not only a miner in itself with the Sulphur Springs resource and various other resources. The big attraction, as I say, is Bill Beament, but it also is into mining services as well, and underground especially. Which is not always the easiest place to be. But they did issue a clarification on that Sulphur Springs thing. They've got a project and reserve update set for the end of this month. They've hit high-grade mineralization outside the current resource. If we do see the resource stocks have a little bit of a renaissance, I wouldn't be surprised to see this one continue to kick higher. So I would stick with that one for the time being. That is for sure. I've got to keep going back here. Happy Friday. What is your view on SRX? SRX. Well, that's Sierra Rutile. Must admit, hasn't really troubled the scorecard, has it? Mineral sands, the Middle East, Europe, and North and South America. Rutile, I guess, you know, rutile isn't massively sexy. Sierra Leone. I've got to say, it's hard to get very excited about this one. Not huge. Volume is a little sporadic at times, to say the least. So that is a bit of a downer for them. Not really one that I have followed, I must admit, David. So I'll probably leave that. It's probably at best a hold. But as I say, if we do see some renaissance in resources, this might get going. But rutile is not the sexiest thing in the world, I have to say. There's going to be sexier things, to be honest, than Sierra Rutile. So not for me just at the moment. Tom Lynn asks, keen to get your thoughts on Aristocrat and AD8. Well, Aristocrat, apart from the ethics surrounding Aristocrat, so we won't go into that, leaving those aside purely on a money-making basis. Aristocrat, obviously, the big poker machine manufacturer, and now online gaming as well, which you'd have to say, I think you could even put an AI aspect to Aristocrat, I have to say. It has been sort of flatlining for a little while, for the last month or so, and it has been a little underwhelming, a little bit out of the out of the limelight. I guess one of the reasons was that it raised a lot of money for an acquisition, which everyone loved and thought it would be fantastic. And then it fell through. They couldn't do the acquisition, and they had a pile of cash, which they didn't know what to do with. Recently, they have announced they are buying NeoGames and increasing the share buyback. So finally, they've got something to do with the money. This is definitely a hold at these sort of levels. It's probably a nibble if you did see any weakness in the share price as well. But Aristocrat, you know, for all its faults, and they have got many in terms of the ethics around pokie machines, I've got to say, it looks as if it could push up towards $40 again, maybe even beyond that. So I wouldn't be averse to Aristocrat, I have to say. As far as Ordinate goes, it's one we have discussed at length on the investment committee, and it's pretty much universally liked to some extent. A lot of fans of Ordinate. It has been a quiet achiever, obviously coming out of COVID with its technology there and conferences, etc. So the Dante video thing is pretty good. I think this one could possibly push higher. Again, you could mount some AI arguments, I guess, looking at some of the uses for NVIDIA's chip and some of the things that came out of that keynote speech that I watched the other day, which I would very much urge you to watch, from Jensen Huang. It is certainly worth watching that, the GTC presentation at a conference. It is well worth watching it. I don't mind Ordinate. It was sort of stuck in a bit of a range, but it looks as if it's trying to break out of that, has broken and consolidated. I think that one could go higher. All right, let's have a look at some of the other questions coming through. Your thoughts on Dev, D-E-V. I haven't had too many thoughts recently on Dev, I must admit. DevEx Resources hasn't really crossed my path. But let's have a little look and see what they've been up to as far as, what have we got here? Extensive rare earth in surface clays at Kennedy Project. They've just had their quarterly activities report. Your significant uranium seems to be back in fashion a little bit after that Namibian scare that we saw in Paladin. We did recommend Paladin as a buy around 52-53 cents, and that one has gone very well, with Namibia really saying, you know, it's all complete and utter rubbish, that we're going to retrospectively look at taking minority stakes in companies that already actually got their licensing and permits. So this one is interesting in some respects. It's starting to get a little bit of interest, and I don't know when they last raised some funds. Just having a little look, because it is the standard operating procedure, of course, is some good news and you pump the share price up and then you raise money. But of course, not everybody does it, but it's a huge amount of people that do it. Very much looking at uranium at the moment from the Nabarlek uranium project in the Northern Territories, high-grade uranium, nickel project Sovereign, junior gold, copper gold. We've got $15 million in cash. It's got a market cap of $133 million, so it's not too bad. Looks as if it's got enough money for the time being, and a little bit of a re-emergence in this resource space could see them push a little bit higher. So I'd stick with that one. Rod, that's for sure. Spheria Asset bought nearly 7% of Appen on the 26th of May. I believe it will continue to $6. Well, Ted, I have to say, that would be nice. I did write this afternoon in the newsletter that I thought that it would, it is worth taking some profits in Appen. You know, it's run from $2 to $3.76 in the space of a couple of weeks. It did a capital raise, a 1-for-6 at $1.85. You know, that was quite a low price to do it. I hope you're right in $6. It did get to around 40 during the COVID lockdown. And Marcus struggled to work out what it actually did, and that's never a good sign. But I have delved a little deeper, and I do kind of know what it does. And I do kind of know what the attraction is for Appen. Large data sets and the ability for human interaction to stop. This is what I love about AI at the moment. They're called hallucinations when the ChatGPT gets it wrong, and it does get it wrong. It's not infallible. Open the pod bay doors, Hal. So I hope you're right with Appen. It would be good if it did. I think it's due for a bit of a pause. I wouldn't be surprised to see it drop back a little bit. And as I say, I did advise people that had been long it and had been enjoying the ride to take some profits. It's always good to take some profits along the way, and this one certainly is quite volatile. So there we go. Just looking at more questions coming through. I thought Rare Earth's going to be the futuring, and then got burned in Hastings and VML. Cut my losses or hang on and hope. Well, Hastings, the problem with a lot of these, it doesn't matter whether Rare Earths are the future or not, to be honest. And Hastings has had a bit of a shocker. Arafura in the same bent as well. It's not easy bringing in mining projects, and the cost blowout that we saw for Hastings in terms of CapEx really did hurt the share price big time. That was certainly more than the market was going for. We did see a bit of a sign of life today. There is a rare earth company that I kind of like at the moment, and I'm going to be writing that off on Monday. But you know, it's one thing discovering rare earths, it's another thing actually building the project on budget and on time. And you know, this is the problem that we've seen with Hastings. Although it's a great project, like any mining project, it takes time and it takes money for the infrastructure and the capex. And that blowout that we've seen across the board in mining capex, it certainly does tend to undermine some of the valuations for some of these stocks. So as far as Hastings go, I think there's a little bit of hope there. It did get very, very overdone to the downside, and there may be a little bit of hope emerging in Vital. But to be honest, it hasn't been a good time in Vital. They've promised a lot, but really have delivered not an awful lot. It's only a $53 million company now. They've got 5 billion shares on issue. So these guys are serial issuers of shares for capital. So I think out of the two, Hastings has probably got more upside and probably a slightly better quality there. So if you were going to chuck one out for tax loss purposes, and of course I'm probably going to be completely wrong, and we do see this time and time again in June, where we see stocks get absolutely whacked on tax loss selling only to rebound strongly in July. If you are looking for tax losses, then maybe that's something you should consider. But you know, it has been sold well and truly down to the point where it is really down and out in Beverly Hills, to be honest. But certainly Hastings, that cost blowout has been the problem there, as it is with any mining company, to be honest. Bob says, looking at BET again after the recent announcement, am I looking at it? Not, I must admit, it hasn't crossed my radar. It obviously has had a bit of a bounce from a pretty low level, to be honest. Let's face it, you know, it was up 24% today, which is 3.5 cents. So it's kind of a punter special. 8.5 million shares traded. They are executing a strategic restructure of the operations. Here we go. They say, please bring out shareholders an update on the cost base reduction. Well, that means they're cutting people. And global efficiencies program, significant operating overhead reductions. You would have to say, I get a bit annoyed with some of these companies that have these big announcements about cutting the cost base. Why has it taken so long? Why have they not been cutting the cost base up till now? So, you know, they're talking about chopping $21 million out of the annualized staff and operating overheads of the business, restructuring global operations and technology. Well, that's all very well, but why has it taken this long? So at the moment, that is the name of the game. If you can show cost cutting and cut your growth options to some extent, Xero have been very successful in that. Let's face it, Marcus picked Xero like an absolute nose, as they say, as the cheapest tech stock in Australia. It's rallied from $60. It's almost doubled this year, pretty much, certainly since November. It has almost doubled. And the simple formula they have affixed themselves to is to not pursue growth at any cost and to put those cost reductions through. And, you know, that has really worked well. It's worked well for the likes of Meta, etc. It's worked well for the likes of Xero. So, interesting there. in terms of what it takes to get things going. Catapult was another one that we've seen as well, which said a similar thing. Look at that one. You see, that's catapulted. That's got nine lives, that one, cat, C-A-T. But again, same sort of story, talking about cost-cutting, etc., which, you know, some of these companies got a little flabby, shall we say, during COVID. So the question was, bet. I think there's probably, you know, there could be a little bit more in that one to come. It's fallen an awful long way. Just be careful we don't see any tax loss selling. 29 metals. When do you think copper charts turning up, and how bad is the Queensland flooding situation? Well, the Queensland flooding situation is pretty bad. 29 metals has been an absolute, pretty much a disaster from a share price point of view. It is the Capricorn up in Queensland got a significant amount of rain, and it is taking a significant time to dewater it. That is the problem, and it has affected infrastructure. The interesting thing, of course, for 29 Metals is that they have got some insurance, and that is something they've talked about. They haven't quantified it, or they haven't updated us really on in terms of what that insurance looks like. But certainly that insurance, you know, it's possible that they may get some insurance money back for the damage that has been done through water. But of course, as we know, insurance companies are tricky little buggers, and they don't really like paying out, especially when they start talking flooding, whether it was a storm event, whether it was egress of water, etc. It's bad enough claiming on your house, let alone on your copper mine. Copper as a commodity, though, has been down in the dumps. I saw today, which was really interesting, I wrote it down, the fall of the nickel price. Nickel is down 28% for the year. And copper, of course, is a proxy for global growth. China has been in the toilet, and that reopening from the pandemic has been spluttery and spasmodic at best. But now we've got the US debt ceiling sorted. Hong Kong had a big jump today. It's possible that we may get a little bit more good news out of China, a little bit of stimulus perhaps, and we may see a little bit more global growth starting to infect the copper price and start to see that push a little higher. It is possible. Let's hope so. But yeah, 29 metals, I think the insurance is the key to it at the moment. It will probably bobble around. It could break a little higher. It has been very much oversold, but there is significant damage from that water and that flooding event that they've seen through the rain. Bob's asking lots of questions. Here we go. What do you think about Kelsian? Kelsian, I like Kelsian. All aboard America. Kelsian is a pretty, let's face it, it is, I wouldn't say a staple, but it is, I guess to some extent, it is recession-proof. We have more and more tourists coming back to Sydney. Of course, they're the Captain Cook people. They've got buses. And they've just bought this thing in the States, All Aboard America, which is, I think it's the fourth or fifth largest coach company in the US. I like this one, I have to say. We have talked about this on the investment committee on AusBiz. Stupidly, we replaced Austal with Kelsian. Now, Austal went, I'll show you Austal, because it was, did have a little bit of a contract win, and it has gone pretty well. Having said that, we replaced it with Kelsian, which has been no slouch itself, and they have completed the All Aboard America acquisition. It was a big acquisition. Companies in Australia have gone to America and failed. Let's face it, you look at Cold Chisel, they never made it into America, but Inxs did. So it is possible, CSL have. It is possible to do. I like Kelsian, and I think it is kind of recessionary proof to some extent. So happy to stick with that one, Bob. Any comments on LRS, Axe and James Ling? Well, LRS, Susie. Hi, Susie. Latin Resources. Well, I like Latin Resources. I'll make no bones about it. I would like to buy some for myself. But compliance always is a bit of an issue. Marcus got in there. I have been talking these for a long time. I think we first started talking these under 10 cents, recommended them at 12, 13, added them to the small cap portfolio, and we have seen, just watching CNBC out of the corner of my eye, there's a lot of frivolity going on. It looks like Jeff Cudmore is celebrating some sort of milestone, so good man that he is. But back to Latin Resources, I like this one. They are come a resource upgrade. They are due to upgrade their resource in June. So we are come that. So I'm more than happy to stick with that. As far as Axe goes, Archer Materials, well, let's not get too carried away with Archer Materials. This is a long-term story. I've met Mohammed Shakir a number of times. I've been to the Fab Lab in Sydney to make sure that it is real. But this is quantum computing. We are still a long way away from quantum computing. However, you would imagine that the advent of AI, which seems to have been an overnight success, but it has obviously been brewing for a long time, could hasten, I suspect, quantum computing. There's a little bit of focus on this one. Mohammed's always had the philosophy to build it and they will come, get the research done, prove it up, and get the patents, and then they will get the big partners will come in, and they're in the right place, because next door to them in the Sydney Fab Lab, they have got the likes of Microsoft, Google, and all those kind of people. So, you know, it's in everyone's mind at the moment. What can you buy that's got AI exposure in Australia? We've got, you know, the brain chips, we've got the Weebit Nanos, we've got the Appens, we've got the Archers. As long as NVIDIA continues to bubble away and people keep bubbling away with the AI story, I think this one will keep bubbling away as well. Johns Lyng Group, these guys, it's not been doing too much recently. We probably need a disaster, not that's a bit cruel to say, but these guys obviously do well out of fixing up stuff for insurance companies after a disaster. They have pushed into America as well, which is a big call, I guess. But the other thing, a lot of builders going bust, so I'd imagine tradies are easier to come by. There certainly seems to be a lot more tradie vans, tradie Tonka toys on the Newport Hill for sale at the moment. So don't mind this one. It's probably a hold at the moment, to say the least. Let's look at a few more questions. Let's go back. I have to keep going back. You used to like MVP, didn't you? The little green whistle heading to the US could be huge. Hi, Bob. Well, yeah, it could be huge. It's been huge here for a long time. I think they're due for some approvals. Could be huge, but it's taken its time. I think, you know, maybe other people are getting better with it. So I'm not so sure I'd be piling into it. I'm not quite sure I ever liked this one, to be honest. I've certainly I've had arguments on Ausbiz on the investment committee about this one. You know, it's very well established technology, but the US doesn't seem to like it at the moment. It's been supposedly heading to the US for a long time. So anyway, the US Penthrox strategy, we've got formally approved the strategic pathway. This was back in April for commercializing Penthrox in the US. Now commence a search for partner organizations to undertake the clinical and non-clinical programs and to launch Penthrox in the market. It's taking forever, isn't it? Not for me. All right, let's, hi Henry, any thoughts about UMG? My thoughts are, hi Jim. Nice to chat to you. I think Jim, you're the same Jim that I spoke to today on the phone. Nice to chat to you today. I think UMG, that's obviously in sort of the Harry Kane takeover basket at the moment. I suspect it will get some sort of deal done with the French, but it may be that the indicative proposal from Multier Soufflé, if that's the right pronunciation, which is at $5, may be amended downwards. So I wouldn't be surprised to see. Now you look here at the chart, $4.75. I reckon if they came back and said, you know what, we've done our DD, $4.75 seems better, that would probably get over the line from everybody's perspective and everyone would be happy. MGF, this is one we talked about and you had some interesting thoughts on this one, and I've got to do some more research on this one, but clearly it is trading at a massive discount at the moment to its NAV, which is $1.92. It's trading at around a 16? I can't remember. It's trading at $1.61. So what's that? 30 cents divided by $1.92. That's a 16% discount, which is probably, I'd say, twice as much as it should be. But the Magellan brand isn't what it was, shall we say. So, but there are some interesting plays in this one, and I'm going to have a little look at this one in a bit more detail for you, Jim, because it is an interesting one to have a look at. Tito Minerals, T-I-E. Tito Minerals, let's have a little look at the chart there. Again, you know, resources have just generally been on the nose across the board. No one's been really that interested in resources. Primary project, the Abu Jar Gold Project. And we have seen a new MD and CEO, Matt Wilcox. I'm not sure of his pedigree. He was an executive director and chief operating officer. Founder and managing director is retiring. They're forecasting gold production guidance of 105 to 120 ounces of gold at an all-in sustaining cost, $875 to $975, so pretty cheap. That's US dollars. So that is relatively good. The new man's being paid $625,000. So let's hope he actually does well. This is in Côte d'Ivoire. Of course, we have seen, I guess, part of the problem and part of the issue with these West African and also other mining stocks overseas, and even to an extent Australia, is sovereign risk, something we talked about, something we saw writ large this week with Paladin, and it was, you know, it turns out to be a storm in a nothing cup, and we have had an opportunity in Paladin to get set there. Certainly Côte d'Ivoire is a pretty good mining country. We've seen Leo Lithium in Mali, there's West African Resources, there's Resolute, etc., and Perseus as well. So gold still hovering around 3,000 Aussie, 2,000 US is still a pretty good place to be, and we are seeing a renaissance in some of these gold stocks, so I would stick with it, my friend. Calix, if trimming, what are your thoughts on Calix? A lot of these smaller caps, a lot of these mid caps, in fact I did a podcast that I chatted to Francis Vadim from Vulcan Energy, which hasn't been a stellar performer of late, and they just did a placement just over $5, and I think it's trading around $3.70. I'll check in a minute. But Calix, you know, you need a constant barrage for investors to keep them interested. There are so many opportunities out there. You know, at the moment, AI is all the go. Who cares about taking CO2 out of the cement production with the calciner. So you've got to keep the good news coming if you're going to keep the share price up. It's a bit like that game of keepy uppy when you're playing it with your mates, trying to keep the sack or the ball or whatever your object is in the air and not hitting the ground. And at the moment, Calix is hitting the ground, but I think it's one to watch, one that I still like, but it would be nice to get a little bit more interest and a little bit more positive news out of there. Mark asks, if trimming due to a downturn, do you keep those funds in cash or go into gold, a bond, ETF or something else? Well, Mark, there's plenty of choices at the moment. I think we wrote the other day, Tina, there is no alternative, has now been replaced by TARPA. There are plenty of alternatives, and I think you've just named three. Gold, physical gold has done well, but it's hardly stunned. It's hardly knocked the lights out to some extent. And we have seen gold decouple to an extent as well in terms of its risk profile. It used to be, you know, the first sign of any problems, gold would go whooshka. But, you know, you look at something like Newcrest recently, obviously the big gold stock, it has not been that flash. It's perked up today, but the likes of, you know, Northern Star. So if you're looking at gold miners, which traditionally have the leverage, it hasn't been that great, although we are seeing a bit of a comeback in places. My favourite has been De Grey, which again has been suffering, as a lot of them have. So there are plenty of alternatives. A bond ETF could be one of them. There are lots of alternatives out there at the moment. And of course, cash deposit rates are pretty high at the moment. So plenty of alternatives there. Chris asked, any thoughts or comments on bots? I'm not sure what bots is. Maybe you mean, I'm not sure what bots is. Chris, you'll have to get back to me on that one. Carolyn, hi, how are you? Can you please comment on COV, C-O-V. Susie asked, what happened to Live Tiles? Good question, Susie. I have to say, what did happen to Live Tiles? Corvest. Let's have a little look at Corvest. I have to say, $82 million market cap, engaged in hot dip galvanizing and sheet metal fabrication. Wow, that sounds exciting, doesn't it? Half-yearly results were out in January. Haven't had much since then. Revenue from trading operations increased 2.7. It's not exactly sexy excitement city, is it? We haven't actually had any news out from Cov for a little while, and the volume is pathetic. So, Karen, I'm sorry, but anything that trades 700 shares a day, or best days, here we are, 1,000 shares, it's just not for me, because it's too hard. If somebody moves to get out and wants to get out of 10,000, 20,000 shares, you are stuffed. It can be very volatile in the short term, so definitely not for me for CoreVest. Susie asks, all this talk about Appen. Oh my God, what happened to Live Tiles? What indeed happened to Live Tiles? What has happened to Live Tiles? LVT. Well, they're market cap $12 million. Development and sale of employee experience workplace software through cloud-based platforms and creating, what are they creating? And delivering solutions that drives employee communications, collaboration in the modern workplace. Isn't that what Atlassian does? Maybe that's the problem. Too many people doing that. A quarterly activities report came out recently. Cash receipts from customers, $9.25 million. Cash balance of 8.4. Market cap of 12.3. So you're paying $4 million for a business that has $9.2 million in cash receipts. Strong support from existing customers. Yep. Search for a CFO progressing. Continues to focus on new customer wins during the quarter. Some of the key global customer wins included a building materials company, a municipal council in Denmark, Germany, US. Cash outflows of $1.25 million during the quarter. It needs to do one of those cost-cutting exercises, Susie, I think. But certainly, you know, if we do see, maybe they just need to mention AI and they'll get a bit of a boost there. But it has been an absolute dog, I have to say. Virginia, it could certainly be under pressure, I guess, in June with that tax loss selling taking hold and keeping it under pressure. And then it could just pop higher after that finishes. So any good news? We did see it hovering around 2.5 cents for a while. Now it's, you know, it's half of that. $12 million, nearly a billion shares outstanding. I have to say, you know, that's a lot of shares, but they do have cash. So that's one thing. So maybe there's some hope for you yet, Susie. Virginia asks, what are your thoughts on Sonic Healthcare? Sonic Healthcare. Healthcare generally has been defensive. I'd say Sonic is going to continue to be defensive, certainly more and more imaging. I had an interesting discussion with Bryce Lesky from Equity Mates as part of my mentoring him. I don't know why he ever picked me. That was a dumb decision. But anyway, we had a discussion and he was focusing, I'm not sure why or where it came from, because he didn't actually give me any notice that he wanted to discuss this, but on head trauma and sports head trauma in particular. And I suggested that maybe Sonic would be a winner from this. Medical diagnostics, you know, I have to say every time I pop over the road to have a blood test, it's busy as hell. They're busier, they tell me, than during COVID. So that is a good sign for Sonic. Clearly they had the COVID bounce. I'd certainly stick with Sonic for the time being, especially if you're looking for something a little more defensive. What is your view on Helium and Blue Star Helium with reserves in Colorado expected to start in the fourth quarter this year? Blue Star, that sounds like something out of Wall Street. Blue Star Helium. It's got all the right things in the name, hasn't it? It's a market cap $42 million, 1.6 billion shares out there. We have had the Voyager development update recently, three-world program at Voyager. I must admit, we keep talking about hydrogen and helium, etc., and I know there's lots of uses for helium, but it doesn't really get the sex appeal just at the moment, although certainly there's potential for it. And as you say, production is expected to start in the fourth quarter. Last quarterly activities report, they got final approval received from GOGCC for exploration wells. Commercial discussions for provision of leased helium factory, a facility at Voyager, highly advanced. Second half to CY 2023. $5.3 million and zero debt. It's going to need more money, I would suggest. So just be careful. It may pay you to wait for an issue, but I would imagine that that is not going to be enough in the big scheme of things. But it is only a $42 million company. So maybe there is potential. As I say, most resource stocks have been under pressure. Will Bird, thank you for that, Will, who of course is our CEO. I always appreciate a curly question from Will. Whitehaven Coal has been, well, look at it, let's face it, fly high. It's like Icarus, flew too close to the sun. If ever that, I'm not a chartist, as many people will know, but that looks to me, you know, we saw some serious double topping happening earlier, well, towards the end of last year, and it's been a one-way traffic since then. Great yield, great cash, you know, dividend yield 12% in theory, 100% franking. Coal price, of course, has been well and truly on the nose. They are conducting a buyback. If you like the coal price, Will, obviously this is a leverage way to play it. They have had guidance out recently. Managed run of mine ROM production, 4.3 million tonnes, but they have had operational constraints at Maules Creek. Production was only up 9%, lower than expected second half production with lower stock levels. So cost guidance has increased as well to reflect changes in operational performance. So we have seen the production guidance downgraded, and we have seen the cost upgraded, and that is not a great position. But they have got a net cash position of $2.7 billion. For a $5.2 billion company. So buybacks and capital management, you would think, would be high on the agenda, but it is geared to the coal price, of course, Bill. Can you update soon on the house deposit basket? Yeah, I will try, Susie. I've got to find it again, because we did lose our Morningstar subscription, and all that data disappeared. So it's a question of trying to find it. I will give it another go next week. I will write it down here in my diary. House deposit basket. I did have somebody else asking for the house deposit basket recently as well. So we will endeavour to find it for you and update it. Now I'm writing it down for you. BOTZ is an ETF on the NASDAQ. Okay, fine. It's not listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, so... not for moi. We have got our FANG Plus ETF. So I will skip that one, I'm afraid, Chris, because I don't do US ETFs. Not licensed to do that. Can't comment on them. Sorry. Paul asks, LYC has gone up. Yeah, LYC, Linus, has gone up. Linus, of course, has solved the problem. To some extent, there was the problem with their licensing, which was due to change on July the 1st with Malaysia, and they would are building a plant in WA to solve this problem. But there does seem to be a little bit of a, well, there was an overlap, or an unfortunate overlap, and a gap, more like, in terms of processing that product coming out of Mount Weld. That has been resolved, or at least it has been pushed down the road. So that is good. And we are seeing a bit of a pickup in rare earths prices. So I would still hold that one for the time being, Paul, I'd have to say. Paul McKenzie, my girlfriend FDV has been a bad relationship. Can you put me out of my misery once and for all? FDV, yes, Frontier Developments. Well, the problem with these guys, I guess, is, well, manyfold, $136 million market cap. They have got stakes in a number of emerging markets. Is that the nice way to put it? Something like the Pakistan car sales business. And that has, you know, you need liquidity events. And also you need either to sell those businesses or to get out at some stage. So they've just updated the market with the LANTAM, Latin America Business Infocasas, and Encuentra 24 businesses, which FDV acquired in 2021. They have the management, the key management executives are exchanging 50% of their cash earnout for equity in FDV. So that's a bit of a vote of confidence, I guess. But, you know, we have seen unlisted and listed tech companies been marked down in terms of their valuations. This one has those sorts of businesses, the equivalent of car sales, I say, in Pakistan and elsewhere in Latin America as well. I think they've got something in Brazil from memory. So it hasn't been an easy journey for these guys. I suspect there could be a little more short-term pain from tax loss. But if we do see this AI frenzy spread, maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel. But certainly, you know, even the likes of Canva got a, they're unlisted, of course, but they did get a downgrade or a valuation downgrade the other day from one of their biggest shareholders with the, not massive, and everyone has their own ideas of valuation, but we need liquidity events. But I guess the management of these guys in LATAM taking shares is a positive. All right, what is your favorite ETF at the moment, Bob? It's got to be FANG, hasn't it? It's got to be FANG. I mean, you can't go past it, surely. Could BOS be DOTS, anti-counterfeit software? No idea, sorry. Jim, have you looked at IV Group lately? Great yield and low PE. I did do a lot of work on IVE Group a while ago and was a big fan, and it went pretty well. But it's sort of slackened off recently, and you're right, it has got a good yield, that is for sure. It yields, according to the wonderful system of Marketech, 7.6%, 100% franc, so it is a good yield. You've got to be careful sometimes, Jim, with the yields. This is a printing business, effectively, IV Group. A mate of mine, Tony Jackson, who I work with at Macquarie, the smartest insurance analyst and best rated insurance analyst, took a job with QBE as the IR guy at QBE, probably the best paid, highest paid IR person in the country. And finally, they rumbled him after a period of time and decided they didn't need to spend quite so much on an IR person. And he got made redundant, and he's been doing some IR for IV Group, but he has been a bit slack. He's been doing some bicycle rides for charity, so he needs to get back on the case, but it certainly seems to be bouncing. Not the most liquid, but you're right, Jim, good yield, low PE, but just be careful. Sometimes the good yield is effectively a capital return if it's not really growing. Who's going to be recycling all the lithium batteries in the future? Good idea. Well, that is a problem, Susie. It certainly, it popped up on ABC Radio yesterday, actually. They were talking about the problem with recycling of lithium batteries, because, of course, lithium batteries are not easy to recycle. And at the moment, tearing them apart is a pretty human endeavor. It's and they are, of course, lithium does tend to catch fire. I remember seeing that in my chemistry classes many years ago, as my teacher Freddie, I can't remember his second name, that's a bit disappointing, isn't it, but he was always pretty keen to demonstrate the wonderfulness of magnesium and lithium bursting into flames. As far as NMT goes, the demonstration plant, they have Primobius, they had an update yesterday. Neo Metals, please provide an update on the activities. The joint venture company owned by Neo Metals and SMS, commercializing its lithium ion battery recycling technology. Certainly, it is going to play a part. There are few out there. Neo Metals, again, you know, this one has been in decline, as have a lot of these kind of stocks been in decline for various reasons, not least of which, of course, is commodity prices, etc. Just the dollar, China, you name it, they've been in decline. There's been little interest. $32 million of cash, $30 million of investment, no debt. I've kind of liked this one. It's certainly shown some promise, so I would probably stick with it in terms of Neo Metals. John, tips for next week. Steve Williams, be kind to your mum. You only get one of those. DVP, we've talked DVP at the beginning of the session, so I think I had it as a continue to hold. Bill Beament, the big attraction there. It was in one of my baskets some time ago. Certainly the starting to get a little bit more interest in this space, in resources generally, so I'd stick with that one. I could probably tell you, Phil, to go the other way, and that way I could hedge my bets a little bit. HLI. Well, there you go. Well, house prices, David. Good, nice to hear from you. Helia Group. House prices, Helia Group. I don't know much about Helia Group. Loan Mortgage Insurance Business Australia. No one can get any mortgages, can they? Low unemployment, interest rates topping out, all positive. They are all positive. House prices are up, but nobody can afford the house prices. That's the problem. The hoops you have to jump through are extraordinary. I was talking to my little friend Bryce, who I mentor, a 32-year-old. He's struggling to get any kind of mortgage. There's so many hoops you have to jump through. Of course, there's the people that can earn the money have got big hex debts to some extent. It's very hard, and although house prices are up, we did see the lending numbers out today, which weren't that impressive. But although house prices are up, that's more a factor of the lack of supply. Of course, you do have 400,000 people heading this way as well, and the RBA chief, Governor Philip Lowe, has got the solution to this, which is kids stay home and everyone else move in with each other, which is just genius. Thanks, Phil. I really appreciate that. Helia Group, as I say, it's not one I come across. $1.17 billion market cap, so it's probably one that I should come across. I mean, there will come a time. The stock price has done pretty well recently. It went absolutely nowhere. And then back in February, what caused that? Back in the 24th of February, we had a big pop higher. We're just going back to February. That was the earnings release update. We did get the earnings out there, which obviously they were much better than anticipated back in February. Statutory net profit of 186.8 million, which was good. Which underlying net profit up 21 million, and everything looked pretty good back in February. So they've re-rated back then. Big spurt higher, dropped off, and are now been clawing their way back. I think it's probably sideways to consolidation at the moment. Lots of reserves, as you say. It is insurance. House prices going up does obviously mean that negative equity is not such a big thing, but one swallow does not a summer make. And some of the house price rises have been distorted by the wonderfulness of the Sydney Morning Herald and other media outlets that consistently and continually report about trophy homes being sold for mega millions. That just, to me, rubs the youth and the young people's noses in it. When they can't afford to rent somewhere, buy somewhere or save up, you're getting their noses rubbed in it by people saying, I paid $65 million for this house because I own one next door. It does aggravate me slightly, but yes, HLI does look on the right track. Consolidate, hold here, I'd say, David. Comments on Macquarie. Ah, interesting one, my old alma mater. Macquarie. It's been kind of going nowhere, I have to say. Good idea, Bob. Post it on the discussion group because it's probably more pertinent there. Susie's asking for a view on Macquarie. Obviously, I like Macquarie. It is leveraged to the market. It has been under a little bit of pressure, as has all the banks. They pushed quite aggressively into mortgages. Clearly, the problem lies, and we're seeing this in the US, and you know, Macquarie is, they call Macquarie the millionaire's factory, and they call Goldman's the sort of the octopus or the squid. And Macquarie is kind of a Goldman Sachs lookalike to some extent, and we have seen US investment banks laying off people because the deals just aren't there. Certainly the volumes aren't there at the moment, and we've seen that in Australia. My problem with Macquarie, and it's something I wrote about a little while ago, is Nick O'Kane, who runs the commodities department, who has made an absolute fortune for the bank and a fortune for himself. So good luck to him. Well done, Nick, after my time. But, you know, that is key person risk to some extent, although Macquarie does build a machine. You know, the hard thing is not necessarily to run a division like Nick is running. The hard thing is actually to get to the position when you are running that division. It's like running a big bank. They pretty much run themselves, to be honest, apart from some strategy and communications and some IR and looking good in front of a Senate committee every now and then. But the hard bit is becoming the CEO, not once you become a CEO, because if you're smart, you surround yourself with smart people that make you look smarter. I think at the moment, Macquarie for me is a hold at best. It's certainly not a sell, but it's not a screaming buy. The problem is volumes in the market are not so great at the moment. Not so great for deals, not so great for IPOs, not so great across the board. So that is having an impact. Recycling assets, which is what Macquarie does best. You know, they'll take the asset into their fund or they'll buy a big asset, some of the big assets in the UK like Thames Water and those sorts of things. They will recycle them and sell them out to funds or whatever. So there is a you know, if the deals aren't there and the valuations aren't there, then that is problematic. But you know, $170, starting to look a little bit tempting, I must admit, especially if we do see a kick in the market. So it's definitely a hold. Last question, why is Ramsey, excuse me, where's my tea? Cold tea. Last question, John, why is Ramsey so sick? Ah, why indeed? I guess the problem for Ramsey is Europe. National Health Service is an absolute mess. It's also got the French exposure as well. That is, I think, what is holding it back. Obviously, things are returning to normal after the... not sure what happened in those 3 years of COVID. I know everyone has their own experiences, but it was kind of a weird pause in people's lives. Ramsey, the attraction there, and it has been bid for, obviously, in the past... the attraction there is the property, separating the property from the actual operations of the hospitals, and to be able to do that, you know, and then lease back the properties so that you're it's almost like a REIT of hospital operation, well, hospital assets, I guess. The problem has been the UK and France, and it will continue to be a problem for them, and that's certainly something that put off. Some of the bidders. I would not be surprised, and I've said this before, that there is a somewhere in this there is a couple of investment bankers that haven't put the Ramsey Healthcare takeover completely out of their mind. I'm sure there's somebody working on a smart way to divorce the French and the English in terms of the overseas healthcare business. You know, we did have a third quarter business update recently. Surgical volumes are returned. Gradual recovery in earnings, that is good. Top line growth in Australia, so I think Australia's fine. I think the problem is, let's just have a look, I think the problem still remains the UK, yeah, and there's price pressures on nurses and all that sort of stuff, so it's kind of hard. France isn't exactly firing. So yeah, that's the problem with Ramsey is Europe. If you could divorce Europe, the deal to be done is separating, demerging, or whatever you want to do it, deconstructing the company into two sections, the property assets and the hospital operations. And I think that is the deal to be done. And I'm sure somebody is working on it. If you look at that chart, and as I say, I'm no chartist, but you'd have to think that that does offer a little bit of defensive buying, and we are seeing potentially a bottom here, and we could push back up to maybe $61-$62 on a good day with the wind behind you and some fairy dust in the air, maybe. Anyway, well, that's it from me. Thank you very much for sticking with me. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. This will be available, as we did last time, which actually proved to be very popular, was the podcast that we did. So I'm simultaneously, I hope I am, recording this as a podcast as well as a session for the, oh, hang on, I say that, simultaneously recording this as a podcast, and it will also be available in this format as well, with the charts and the pictures and everything. But I have a date with my wife over at the Avalon Bowling Club, and then we're going to dinner with some friends. So I hope you all have a lovely weekend. The Saturday newsletter will be out. A couple of good restaurant recommendations if you're in Sydney. A couple of good TV recommendations. Talking to people at the Melbourne Members Night, seemed that the TV was all they liked about things I wrote. So maybe I should just write that every week. But anyway, that's it from me. Thanks very much for listening. Have a great evening and a great weekend. And we'll be back, of course, again on Monday. And we'll do this Ask the Analyst all again at some point in the future. Thanks again.